inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. I'm Walker Wildman. It's our Friday edition of the program, and it's good to be with you. As we do each Friday, we'll have Chris Woodward in with us in the last segment. And then we've got another guest today, I wouldn't say frequent, but a previous guest of the program, MD Perkins. He's the director, producer for our latest film, Culture Warrior. Don Wildman of the Battle for Decency, MD, will be on with us here in just about 15, 20 minutes. And we'll talk to him about why you should go to culturewarrior.movie and watch the film there. It's an excellent documentary, and I'm not just saying that because it's about my grandfather, but it really tells the story about how we got to where we are today when it comes to evangelical Christian involvement in government, in politics, in culture, in entertainment, etc. And there was a sleeping giant that needed to be awakened in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s because there were so many believers, so many Christians that were just sitting around on their hands. And they weren't engaged, they weren't involved, they didn't know what was going on in our country. And my grandfather really began to wake people up, and the Lord used him for that purpose and basically created a voice for Christians in this country to speak about their values and to speak about the direction in which our country should go. So that's a lot to say. Go to culturewarrior.movie and check it out. We'll talk to MD here in just a few minutes about more of the inside scoop of why we produced the film and some of the themes that are throughout the film Culture Warrior. Culturewarrior.movie is the URL. And yes, it's free. It's free. Yes, we could charge if we wanted, but this is about impact. This is about impact. Of course, we would love for people who've never heard about the ministry to watch Culture Warrior and become financial supporters and activists with the ministry, but we want to make this film available for free at culturewarrior.movie. Psalm 150 is where we are this week. Praise the Lord. Praise God in His sanctuary. Praise Him in His mighty expanse. Jumping down to verse 6, let everything that has breath praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. Everything that has breath on this earth should praise the Lord, because every human is created in the image of God. Every animal on the planet was created by God as part of His creation. So Psalm 150 reflects just that. I want to play a clip here. This is National Security Advisor Michael Waltz, and he's talking about what needs to happen regarding these negotiations between the United States and Ukraine. What needs to happen in order to bring people back to the table so that more peace can be discussed when it comes to the war in Russia and Ukraine. Clip one.
Success looks like President Zelensky sitting down and talking the terms of peace, talking about what he needs to see, Ukraine needs to see, to get to a partial ceasefire, a permanent ceasefire, and an end to this war. And what became so evident to us in that session was he's not ready to talk peace at all. But here's the problem. Time is not on his side. Time is not on the side of just forever continuing this conflict. The American people's patience is not unlimited. Their wallets are not unlimited. And our stockpiles and munitions are not unlimited that we need for all kinds of contingencies around the world. So the time to talk is now. And you know what we're hearing in terms of alternatives, whether it's the Democrats or leaders around the world, is essentially continuing this grinding World War I style trench warfare that is a meat grinder of people, munitions, and national treasure. The president campaigned on ending this war. He was elected to end this war. He will be the peacemaker in chief. But it was really confounding to us that Zelensky could have left the White House Friday, having the U.S. and Ukraine bound together economically for a generation. You have the British talking about troops on the ground and a security guarantee, the French talking about troops on the ground and security guarantee. We even had the NATO Secretary General talk to the president just before the Zelensky meeting. So this was no ambush. This was an opportunity and a moment. And I think President Zelensky truly did his country a real disservice by not having a positive outcome Friday. And, we'll see where things are going forward.
Well, there you have it. That's National Security Advisor Michael Waltz, a former congressman working with the White House there. And that's a good summary. I mean, that's about a two-minute summary. But look, Ukraine really missed out. Zelensky really missed out by acting a fool in the Oval Office, actually a week ago today. And do I think there will be a deal? I think so. Look, the practical reality is, despite all the emotions, despite all the hype, and despite all the warmongers out there, which I've never understood, this fascination with war is quite revealing. And I really don't understand it from a human perspective. But nonetheless, the deal that President Trump has proposed does two things. It reimburses the United States, at least partially, for the billions of dollars we've spent in Ukraine. That's the first thing. Secondly, it ties the U.S. and Ukraine together economically. It puts U.S. assets and personnel on the ground in Ukraine conducting business, which gives Ukraine a leg up in the negotiations for a ceasefire and a peace deal with Russia. Now, Zelensky has said, I don't know how many times, he even said it in the Oval Office. He said, basically, Putin's the bad guy, and there will be no ceasefire. There will be no peace deal, which it's like, really? So 3 years isn't enough. 3 years and hundreds of thousands of dead soldiers isn't enough to come to the negotiating table. And so it really, really begs the question as to what the end goal here is. And this is why in the very early weeks and months of this conflict in Ukraine, I even said this on the air, that we need to be very careful here. We need to be very careful because if we don't have an objective, if we don't have an achievable objective, that is, then we're going to spend a decade and about trillions of dollars in Ukraine. And at the end of the day, we're going to leave there in the same place and in the same position that we were going in, because that's what happened in Afghanistan. We came in and tried to take out the Taliban, and we left, and the Taliban was still in control. And so the clear objective of what's going on in Ukraine, if the objective is to get Ukraine back to the pre-war borders and to send the Russian troops back into Russia, well, you've had 3 years to do that, okay? As lofty of a goal as that might be, you've had 3 years to do it and you haven't done it yet, okay? And so President Trump's position is one that comes from a position of humanity, which is hundreds of thousands of Russians and Ukrainians have lost their lives in the trenches in Ukraine, and it's time for it to end. It's time for it to end. And for people, you know, to act like that peace deals or ceasefires are somehow immoral, they're wrong, they're ceding ground to Putin. Folks, let's do a little history lesson here, okay? If you look back in the history of world wars, and you look back in the history of wars in general around the world, ceasefires and peace deals are commonplace, okay? Ceasefires and peace deals are commonplace, okay? You look at North and South Korea, and they have a demilitarized zone. You look at how Israel is structured. You look at other different parts of the world. And much of what we see today is a result of two parties that oppose each other coming to the negotiating table and stopping the killing. And so this narrative that we can't negotiate with Putin, we can't do a ceasefire, it's wrong to do a ceasefire. Who are we kidding? Okay, let's act so virtuous that we can't do a ceasefire. Not to mention, this is there were a lot of things that happened leading up to Putin invading Ukraine that were completely unnecessary and unnecessarily provocative towards Russia. All right. We can talk about CIA assets on the ground in Ukraine. We can talk about Ukraine and continually talking about NATO membership pre-war. You've got U.S.-funded bioweapons labs in Ukraine, dozens of them in Ukraine. There were all kinds of indications where Putin was sending a warning shot over the bow that, hey, you guys need to back off. I don't want NATO on my border. And Ukraine and others didn't listen. The Obama and the Biden administration continued to be provocative in Ukraine. And we are where we are today. Now, does that justify Putin going into Ukraine? Well, probably not when you do put it all on paper. But nonetheless, Ukraine is no clean whistle here. All right. Ukraine is no perfect union here. Okay. And also the talking points about democracy. Well, Ukraine's really not a democracy when you look at it. They haven't had an election in 6 years. Okay. There's no democracy that skips elections by definition. Okay. Not to mention the, Ukraine is notoriously corrupt. They're one of the most corrupt Western civilized nations in modern history. Okay, they rank on up there as far as some of the most corrupt nations in history, or at least in modern history. So, to act as if Ukraine is this kind of bastion of a constitutional republic, in the middle of Europe, is just not, that's just not true. That's just not factual. So I say all that to just kind of get people off their high horse of that Ukraine's this like sacred calf that we can't let go of. And if we cede 1 mile to Vladimir Putin, then we're ceding to the devil. Like this kind of spiritual terminology that's being used to describe this battle, this war, it really, in many ways is overrated. Now, you know, there's a lot of caveats here is my point. That not everything's black and white, cut and dry, crystal clear when it comes to this conflict. So the, the Lord willing, and I mean this sincerely, Ukraine will come back to the table, the negotiating table with the U.S. For the sake of from a human level, for the sake of peace. And I think both sides are going to have to give up. They're both going to have to compromise some things. But what Zelensky is flirting with here is he's flirting with the complete fall of Ukraine. And I know that sounds crazy, but at some point, Ukraine's going to run out of soldiers. Okay? Russia's recruiting soldiers from North Korea, from other nations, so they're just continually fueling their military. But, and they're a larger nation, obviously, than Ukraine. But at some point, Ukraine's going to run out of soldiers. And that's not going to be good. It's not going to be good. And it could lead to actually Russia getting more ground than they already have, which, who wants that? Nobody. Ukraine needs to come back to the table. They need to sign the mineral deal, and we need to continue moving towards a place where the killing stops. That's the position of President Trump. I think it's a noble position. It's what he campaigned on. It's what he told the voters he would do. And so we'll keep watching it. We'll be back in a few.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program. Walker Wildman here with you on this edition of At the Core. The show's hosted each week by myself and Rick Green. We rotate hosting the show each week and each day. And we have MD Perkins in with us. He's been on the program multiple times before talking about various projects. But MD, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, good to be with you, Walker.
Well, for those who don't know, we have a film division. Most do, but if you're maybe new to AFR, we have a film division, American Family Studios, and it's a relatively small team when you look at the kind of products that we're producing, the kind of films that are being produced here. But we've produced over the years kind of mini-series. We've produced what's known as cultural institutes, kind of these lectures on various biblical worldview issues. Yep. And then, of course, feature films, MD, is what we've produced as well. Several feature films over the last maybe decade or so. But Culture Warrior is the most recent, and it's about my grandfather, Don Wildman. And the byline, if you will, is Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency. And so we're having an emphasis week because what you and I have realized, MD, is that you can't really oversaturate the market when it comes to promoting something like this.
Oh, sure.
Because you and I have been traveling, doing different dinners and events with our supporters, and half the room's never heard of the film, which it's shocking because we feel like we talk about it all the time. But give us a little background or kind of set this up, if you will. What is Culture Warrior?
Yeah, so first of all, y'all go watch it, culturewarrior.movie.
Exactly.
Go watch it. I think you will enjoy it, I'm pretty sure. Like, we really tried to make a movie that, you know, it is a documentary, but it's engaging. You know, it has momentum and pacing to it. You're going to kind of get swept up with the story is what I believe that will happen once you start watching it.
Yeah.
But it's a story of your granddad. You know, it begins in, it's really the whole story of his life from his early days to his retirement from AFA. But, you know, the ministry focus begins in 1976 when he's sitting down to watch TV and doesn't find anything suitable to watch. And then that initiates the starting of the National Federation for Decency. And then those culture concerns that he has regarding media and TV monitoring and consumer boycotts as a way to try and get his emphasis heard. Because very early on, I mean, he recognized these Hollywood executives and TV moguls, you know, they might listen to you, quote unquote,
right.
But they're not really going to budge in what they're going to make what they want to make.
Sure.
And so if you could put some economic pressure on them, that's the only way that they will listen. And sure enough, that's what he found to be the case. And so, you know, this covers not just Don's battle, you know, and the way that AFA grew over the years, and National Federation for Decency changes its name to American Family Association in 1988.
Yeah.
But it really is the untold story of conservative Christian activism in this country.
Yeah.
You know, what are these cultural battles, the history of how we got here? If you want to understand, you know, how America became so woke or what is going on, how did we get here? Watch this movie, because this shows you all of those concerns, you know, many of which Don's concerns were not heeded, or they weren't heeded in as significant a way as now maybe in hindsight we wish would have been.
Yeah, they weren't taken seriously by many people. And I actually talked on a show earlier today about how as a Methodist minister, my grandfather was actually mocked and ridiculed by fellow Methodists at the annual conference. And they kind of laughed at that Don Wildman down in Mississippi, so even amongst his own denomination, there was some disrespect there in the early years. But once again, we're talking to MD Perkins. CultureWarrior.movie is the URL. We want everybody to watch this. Look, it's free, and some call it a film, some call it a documentary. We could really get into parsing the words, but let me just tell you, it doesn't have a documentary feel to it, all right? It's very fast-paced. We interview obviously people who knew my grandfather, but we also show kind of clips of what was happening during the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and the early 2000s. So it's very entertaining, honestly. If you want to know, how do we get to where we are today? You know, what has happened over the last 40 to 50 years in our country from a cultural vantage point? It's almost like a 90-minute plus, like snippet of how did America get from the 1970s, you know, to the 2000s to where we are today. A lot of that is kind of summarized in the film Culture Warrior Movie. But Michael, I wanted to ask you about how much my grandfather was involved in, because I'm learning new stuff every day. But even like the Tea Party movement, which was kind of 07, 08, 09, kind of around the Obama era, people were tired of government spending. But my grandfather was even involved in the early years of the Tea Party movement. So there's just so much that he had his hands in.
Oh, yeah. And there was way more than we could include in this documentary. You know, at some point I almost thought, you know, is this a three-part miniseries, you know, or something, you know, that... You know, I think the Lord kind of reined me in and said, no, I mean, people need kind of an hour and 40 minutes is kind of a good vantage point. But yeah, I mean, like the Tea Party movement, you know, internet or pornography in hotel rooms, especially Holiday Inn back in the 80s and 90s. I mean, that was something that got a lot of Christian leadership behind it. You know, dealing with the homosexual agenda, even confronting gambling and state gambling laws and things like that that were happening, which we don't cover in the documentary. But I mean, your granddad saw with incredible clarity, and I think we can accurately say that it was a prophetic vision. You know, like he was seeing things in a way with a clarity and a prophetic understanding of how this is going to play out.
Sure.
If this happens in a way that I really do think is unique.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I came to really appreciate. You know, I mean, like, you know, I mean, I've worked here for a little over 10 years now, but I mean, I didn't get a lot of personal interactions with your granddad. When I started here, he was already phasing out of being up here at the office very much. And by the time we were working on the documentary, he was in such declined health that it really wasn't good for me to kind of spend – I couldn't have productive conversations with him
you know,
regularly. So all of this had to come through what he had written, what he had said and been recorded, or, you know, conversations with people who knew him. And it was just incredible to kind of get this full-orbed view of him that didn't conflict – with each other, but it conflicted with the media's representation of him, which was always so critical of him, so skeptical of his motives. You know, I mean, I was just seeing something today, like with the screenwriter for The Last Temptation of Christ. The Last Temptation of Christ was one of the big campaigns in 1988.
Yeah,
but the screenwriter was talking about how all of the uproar over this, it was just a fundraising effort by these religious groups. You know, this is a Hollywood guy acting like we care about money, but like Hollywood
they don't.
Doesn't.
Right.
It's just, you know, the hypocrisy is incredible here.
Yeah.
But, you know, these were the kinds of things that that Don and other culture warrior leaders, because, I mean, we call it the battle for decency because it wasn't Don Wildman's battle in solo. You know, there were others who jumped in the fight and others who were involved at different points, and Don locked arms with so many different people. But we want to give the sense of the scope of it, that it was a battle for decency, and that battle continues today.
Yeah.
And so.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're talking to MD Perkins, director and producer of Culture Warrior. CultureWarrior.movie, it's free. We want to send everybody to watch it. And look, folks, if you can't watch it right this second as you're driving down the road, make a note. This evening, tomorrow, whenever you can watch it, go to CultureWarrior.movie. It's free. All you have to do is key in your name, and you can watch the film for free at CultureWarrior.movie. Also, folks, as far as there's multiple reasons that MD and I could convince you that you need to go to CultureWarrior.movie, but let me just tell you this. If you have been listening to American Family Radio, or you've supported AFA in any regard, maybe you've just signed our petitions, responded to an email, gotten the magazine, this film will give you not only a greater appreciation for just the history of AFA and the history of our country over the last 50 years, but I think, honestly, it will give you purpose, and it should give you some kind of vision as far as what your role is, because Don Wildman, my grandfather, he was just one man, just like you and I. And so, you know, I'm not going to say there was nothing special about him, because there was, but at the end of the day, he was still one person carrying out the work here at AFA. And of course, God blessed his efforts. God did give him vision for the purpose of American Family Association. But MD, this film really serves as not just kind of an educational film, but it's really a call to action for people to not only be salt and light where they are, but also if you've ever supported AFA, it helps you understand, hey, this is why I support what these folks are doing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so glad you brought that up, because one of the big themes, and I hope is the takeaway for people, is that one person can make a difference. You know, yeah. The person who says that in the movie is a lady named Vicki Burris. She served for about a decade as the state chapter director. Yes, we used to have state chapters
all around the country.
And hers was in Indiana. And, you know, Don handpicked her because she had been a volunteer there for many years and had served on some things. But she was a woman with a broken background because her husband had been addicted to pornography, ruined their marriage. And so she was deeply concerned about the impact of pornography on families, on women in particular. And so, you know, she was very concerned about how this was impacting things. And so to actually hear someone like Dawn, who was actually addressing the issues that she was seeing in her own life, and when she would go to churches and ask people about things and nobody else was really talking about this, she felt like she finally heard a voice in the wilderness actually talking about the things that she needed to do. And so when she says one person can make a difference, I'm just thinking of her feeling, ill-equipped, not really feeling like she can do much, not feeling like she has much of a voice when she would go in and try and speak to somebody who might be a district attorney or something, you know, would kind of be dismissed very, very, gracious way.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then to see her now speak so confidently and so boldly. And she directly attributes Dawn with giving her that confidence and boldness to speak out. And that doesn't mean that everyone becomes a ministry leader in some form. But the point is that you can do something. You can write a letter. You can make a phone call. You can send an email. You can try and share the truth with a friend who's maybe a little combative on these things. There's so many ways, and that's what AFA is all about, is trying to get people activated. You know, I learned pretty quick in my time here, the call to action matters on everything that we make. It's not just about making something that's nice or fun or it's a good thing to watch, but we're trying to point people to a purpose. And it's that call to action that I think makes AFA unique among the other offerings of ministries out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Folks, we want you to go to culturewarrior.movie right now and watch this film. It's excellently done. And I can't take credit for it. MD Perkins and Austin Brooks and the rest of the team over at American Family Studios, along with all the contributors, they put this thing together. And I believe it's ordained. I believe it's blessed by God, because it tells a story about how God works through average people, And let me just also kind of end on this note with our audience. This ministry, American Family Association, we exist because of people like you. So we can produce as many films as we can produce, but if you don't go and watch these, if you don't go and consume these products, these resources, and share them with people that you know, then in some ways, you know, our work is in vain. So we need you to go to culturewarrior.movie and watch this film. It's very, very impactful. Our recommendation is probably 12 or older, I think is the recommendation, just because we do cover some of the heavy-hitting cultural issues, being pornography and otherwise in the film. So that note being for families, for young families out there, 12 or older is what our recommendation is. Of course, parents, you can watch it first and use your own judgment on that. But MD, as we wrap up, what was maybe one of the highlights of the film? I know there's a lot there, but as far as the people you interviewed, the stories that were told, maybe what's something new that you learned or a highlight that really just stood out to you as you produced this film?
Well, one particular highlight to me was getting to meet Gary Glenn, who was also another chapter director of Michigan this time. And And Gary's passed away. He passed away shortly after we interviewed him. We knew he was not doing well. He had cancer, and he had rested up all day, God bless his heart, to interview with us. And he gave us an hour or so of his time. And just so many war stories. You know, it really gave me such a deep appreciation for just the level of work and intention and detail that goes into any particular battle. You know, it's just trying to do one thing sometimes take coordinating so many different little details and facets. You know this from your work with AFA Action. But, sometimes as an outsider who doesn't understand the political process and some of those things as well, it really gave me a deeper appreciation for some of the diplomatic efforts, some of the ways that you got to build coalitions across different boundaries, some of the ways that you have to, and some of the ways that your work gets stymied by people who claim to be on your own side.
Right.
And so it's just incredible. Guys like Gary Glenn, others that we interviewed, Ben Bull was another delight. He was general counsel here at AFA. From 1990 to 93, only a very short tenure, but he had a lot to say during that time because that was right when Don was getting sued by a lot of these big places. So.
You know, the MD, the how I know that we're still doing the work of Don Wildman is when I watch the film and we're still doing the vast majority of the things that my grandfather and AFA were doing 30 and 40 years ago. We're still doing today.
Yeah.
Whether it's battling pornography through legislation and the era of the internet, it looks a little bit different. Whether it's looking at legislation and constitutional amendments on marriage and restoring one man, one woman marriage, making sure that human sexuality according to the biblical precepts is upheld and promoted, and then we're not denigrating and confusing young people with their sexual identity, all these various cultural issues, AFA is still on the front lines today.
Amen.
Fighting these battles. So go to culturewarrior.movie, check it out. Thanks, MD.
Thank you.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. Chris Woodward's in with us, as he is each Friday. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Well, Chris, we won't spend the whole segment because we might lose people, but let's talk a little bit of economics and tariffs.
Yes.
The president made it clear he's been a huge tariff fan since his first administration, his first term. And Trump mainly uses tariffs to do two things, to negotiate and to balance out the trade deficit that we have with certain countries. But he has been throwing around tariffs a lot over the past, his first 5 or 6 weeks. The markets are jittery. They don't like it. Now, I'm a tariff fan. I'm not of the belief that, it's going to cause America's prices to skyrocket and everybody's going to, have 20% inflation because of tariffs. I think I'm not neglecting the fact that there could be price increases because of tariffs, but I think the positive outweighs the negative, I guess, is my point. But nonetheless, the market clearly doesn't like it.
No, the market, it doesn't. There was one day this week where it was positive. That was when they had announced they were going to put a pause on some of the tariffs in some of the countries. I think one of the things the media has failed to do here is to include the talking points from the Trump administration that, yes, there might be some discomfort over here for farmers and other people that might have to pay some higher prices in the short term, but we're doing other things to, for example, lower energy prices. We're doing other things to maybe open up new markets for our meat producers to send things to another country in Asia versus China. And that idea or talking point has not been included in all of the stuff that CNN and MSNBC want to do. They instead just want to include Justin Trudeau telling Donald, this is not a good idea.
Right.
And stuff like, you get half the story when you watch certain news outlets.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll keep watching that. I think I will say this, regardless of where you fall on the tariffs, and I know there's people that are friends that completely don't like tariffs. It's almost like a religious thing.
Taxes or tariffs.
They hate
or
tariffs.
Tariffs or taxes.
Yeah. But I don't hear them often talk about how unconstitutional the income tax is. But nonetheless, I digress. I think this is temporal. I think the market reaction is fleeting. I think that President Trump is trying to set the U.S. economy up for long-term success, and the stock market doesn't work in that arena. They work on headlines.
Yes.
So long-term, I'm completely not fretting at all. Look, my retirement account is so risky. You know, I go up and down 20% in a day. But I think long-term, so my point is I understand the drops in the market. And nobody likes drops in the market. But fundamentally, President Trump is a good economy president. I just don't see this being a long-term problem.
Yeah.
I think the markets will so get over this, like next week.
One thing people need to realize, too, not that I don't watch these channels and value the opinions of some of these people, I'm not going to name them, but generally speaking, the people that are brought on to a cable television news network that we might lend our ear to, some of those people are paid to go on there and give their take on things. You know, who's telling you to tell America that tariffs are bad and this is not a good idea and he should avoid this or whatever?
And they also want it to be interesting television, right? In some ways, it's a form of entertainment.
It is. It's a business. They're trying to get you to stay. That's why they slap everything as a news alert, even though it was breaking news 3 days ago.
Right. Yeah. So I think long-term, mark my word, long-term the markets are going to be fine. And I think long-term what President Trump's doing is a good thing. There might be some rough patches along the way, but structurally, our economy needs some improvements, and that's what he's fixing. And
yes.
So we're going to have some bumps along the way.
We talked about it at some point last year, maybe the year before when we started doing these weekly segments. America is a business, and it needs a businessman to run it.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump clearly was the person that the overwhelming number of Americans wanted in that position to fix things like the economy. Rome wasn't built overnight. The system is not going to be fixed either. So give him some time. Let him cook.
Yes.
As young people say today about sports and coaches and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, give him some time.
Clearly his recipe works because he has a first term to show for it. And nobody can answer how the tariffs were bad on the first term. They weren't. And there was little to no inflation in the first term. So I think he has the recipe for success. It's just going to take a while to get in the system.
Yes.
Probably 12 months is what I would suspect. Let me ask you this. Let's shift gears and talk about the Hamas. I see you got the Hamas headline over there.
Yes.
This thing's never going to end, Chris. And I know Trump gave him another ultimatum, but at some point you got to pull the trigger on these guys.
Yeah, I think to be honest with you, that's probably
they're
coming
close, aren't
soon.
They? Yeah.
For those not aware, you can find this on our website, afn.net. The headline is, Hamas terrorists dismiss Trump demand to release all hostages. The Hamas terrorist group yesterday brushed off President Trump's latest threat and reiterated that it will only free the remaining Israeli hostages in exchange for a lasting ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Trump's not going to play ball with that.
No. Chris, here's the predicament. And I was in the Holy Land a week or two ago. Here's the dilemma that Netanyahu's in. There are still live hostages in Israel, in Gaza. Now, there's only roughly 20, 22 live hostages. Unfortunately, there's roughly 60 bodies, 60 dead hostages. So there aren't many living hostages is my point.
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth Hamas would keep bodies of dead hostages is completely animalistic. It's completely below the dignity of a human being under any circumstance is sickening, but what do we expect, right, after what they did on October 7th?
Mm-hmm.
But their predicament, Chris, is if you send in special operators to take out Hamas, they kill the hostages.
Right.
All right. Now, can Israel work some tricks, right? They're pretty smart. They've got pretty advanced intelligence. They might can be able to pick off and save a couple hostages without casualties.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the predicament they're in, Chris. And at some point, if you want Hamas to be completely eliminated, you have to go in for the hostages.
Right.
And I don't know what that looks like, and there are definitely political calculations involved. But if this is going to be a Hamas holds the hostages for everything, That's just not going
to
work.
Yeah, and the last thing that somebody needs upon his return to office while he's being hammered for not bringing down egg prices and all these other things that Democrats are trying to put the blame on him for, which is silly.
Yeah.
You don't want the optics of some foreign policy blunder where headlines are going to say,
20 hostages die.
Yeah, 20 women and children killed in failed raid by the U.S.
True. That's a good point.
That will hurt everybody, not just this president, who's not up for re-election, but those trying to win again in the midterms.
Yeah, and the families and the domestic politics in Israel, because, you know, that's a situation too. And Netanyahu has to answer to those families that are still that are related to the hostages still stuck over there. So it's a bad situation, my friends. And, you know, I don't know at what point – one day I'm like, yeah, they need to go in and embrace the risk.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I think, well, if I'm the family of the hostages, I don't want them going in because they're gonna sacrifice the hostages. So I kind of go back and forth on what the right thing to do there is. But at the end of the day, Hamas has to be obliterated. And I think once they can assure the safe release of those hostages – I think Hamas will be obliterated, but let's don't forget, Chris, some of these hostages that were released are hostages that go back to pre-war.
Mm-hmm.
One gentleman that was released within the last 2 weeks, he had been there 10 years. So it's not beyond Hamas to keep these folks for a decade.
Right.
Now, I don't know how you stomach that, but we're getting to the point, Chris, I guess is my point, that you send in special operators and assume the risk,
mm-hmm.
or you just accept the fact that Hamas is going to have hostages for the next 10 years.
Yeah, it's tough. We definitely need to pray for decision makers, President Trump, Mr. Netanyahu, and others that are going to be deciding whether or not to actually go in and do these things.
Yeah.
Certainly, we need to pray for the good guys to be the victors here and for no harm to be done to hostages. You know, you talked about how this is never going to end. I mean, these people groups were fighting centuries before Columbus set sail for the
Duly
new world.
Duly noted.
And they're still fighting. And to be honest with you, they had been fighting for a very long time before Columbus.
Yeah, and Chris, when you go over there, there's Hamas and Hezbollah, and there's the rest of the Arabs. And when you're actually in Israel, and even in the West Bank, of which I went, the Arabs, for the most part, now there's exceptions, right? But for the most part, I would say the majority, if not the overwhelming majority of Arabs in Israel, they don't like Hamas.
No.
They don't like Hezbollah.
I mean, Jordan doesn't want them back.
They don't like Iran, exactly. Yeah, Jordan and Egypt don't want anything to do with them, and neither does Saudi Arabia, and there's others too. But my point is that this is not a large faction. This is not a large party here that we're talking about. So I think that's a compelling case for no more control, no more Hezbollah and Hamas. The numbers, not to mention the moral argument here about how inhumane they are, but the argument on sheer numbers and like political calculations, there's just not a lot of them. There's just not a lot of Hamas folks out there, especially at this point, to make it to where you got to do this whole two-party talk. A lot of Arabs live peacefully in Israel, and they don't want anything to do with Hamas. As a matter of fact, they're furious at Hamas because they've lost their livelihood and their income because tourists aren't going to Israel anymore, or at least not for now. So I wanted to give that backgrounder. Yeah. As well.
You know, that again is a story that you should see. It's not a lead story, but it needs to be the meanwhile sidebar kind of story on a lot of television news coverage, because a lot of left-leaning news outlets specifically, it's the poor Palestinians and the Hamas people, Israel's being mean to them again today.
Right.
And you don't get the, listen, these people are savages, to use Mike Huckabee's words on Fox a couple of weeks ago when they were returning hostages and cheering when some of the dead bodies were being returned to the families.
I know.
They're not kind people. And people need to be aware of this is what you're symbolically supporting when you're marching down the street of a campus somewhere.
With your Hamas flag.
Right.
Yeah, I know. It's absurd. On the negotiating front, we've talked about the Zelensky, the U.S., the Trump negotiations. What's the latest on that? And don't you think that at some point he's just going to have to come to the table?
Yes, and I think he will probably do that next week. I was surprised it wasn't already done this week, because we all know the situation, the shouting match in the Oval Office, as I like to call it.
Yeah.
And then Zelensky sends the letter going, upon further review, I've decided that to accept your offer. Let's work together. In another story we have on our website, Zelensky says Ukraine and the U.S. will hold talks next week about ending the war. So 3.5 years into this, this thing might actually come to a halt. And we'll find out whether or not that minerals agreement and other things will really start to take effect. I thought, Trump might announce a decision here, an agreement during this week's speech before the joint session.
Yeah.
But I was wrong.
Yeah, I'm glad he didn't. Zelensky is too unstable, if we're being honest. I mean, this guy's all over the map. Because I'll see a video that he posts or a message on like X, and it's like, blah, blah, blah about regretting how it went down in the Oval Office. And then the next video is like, there will never be a peace deal. And so it's like total mixed signals coming from Zelensky. But I think Trump's team is probably like gun shy.
Yes.
And they're not saying anything until the ink's like dry.
It's probably a good tact. I mean, he is an actor by profession, although Trump has also done movies. Right. Ronald Reagan was an actor, was a great president. I'm not saying you can't be a president and be an actor at the same time and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But he's good.
He knows how to do the TV stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what we've seen. Certainly, we saw from the situation in the Oval Office that what he tells you he's going to do, he decides on the fly. He's not going to do.
Yeah.
And for Democrats to claim Trump's unstable, they've been largely silent on the issue of Zelensky.
Yeah.
Although people like Elizabeth Warren clap because they want the war to continue for years, like Trump pointed out this week.
Yeah, and then the Oval Office, spat, if you will. I'm actually glad it happened. You know, some people act like it's the end of the world if there's an argument on TV in the Oval Office, and it's like, I mean, come on, guys. I mean, we're all humans here, and it's okay to have a disagreement. It's not everything has to be so structured and follow the script and put your makeup on and everybody act fake.
Right.
They just had an honest gentleman discussion in the Oval Office, and there's clearly disagreement on how to move forward here.
We didn't get a constitution because everybody was being nice.
I agree. So this whole talk about it's the end of the world because somebody had a disagreement in the Oval Office, I disagree with that. I think these things are healthy.
Mm.
Whether you're pro-Zelensky, pro-Putin, pro-Trump, wherever you fall on the spectrum, we got to see that Zelensky, at this point, Zelensky right now is the main hurdle to peace.
Yes, and I think the fact that he had a change of heart after the exposure, I'll call it, and after meeting with like the British Prime Minister, he realized, hey, I really need to work with the U.S. here.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I'm not exonerating Putin, but right now Zelensky seems to be the one, at least that's being covered, that is using words like there will be no ceasefire and there will be no peace deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not good optics when thousands of men are losing their lives in the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
And President Trump, as the leader of the free world, is trying to bring people to the table. So there's that. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, folks, if you want to follow all these stories, AFN.net, AFN.net, we encourage you to check it out. We'll see you next week.
Preborn celebrates that Roe v. Wade has been overturned. Roe has been responsible for the slaughter of over 63 million babies. Now the decision to abort a child will be left in the hands of the states, and sadly, abortions will continue in the most liberal states. Over the past 16 years, Preborn has positioned their clinics in the top abortion cities where 50% of abortions occur. Preborn's work of saving babies' lives continues at an even greater level as they save babies' lives and defend their centers from the radical hate groups who want to shut them down. Preborn's response is dependent on you, the pro-life community. Be a part of rescuing lives and changing hearts for Christ. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 will help to rescue 5 babies' lives. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.